Not long after taking office in January, United States President Donald Trump signed an executive order for the country to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It delivered on one of Mr. Trump's key campaign commitments, but it also set the tone for questions about his overall commitment to the region. This was his logic on the TPP.
The problem is the United States is always taken advantage of.
Yes.
We have hundreds of billions of dollars of trade deficits with China. We have $805 billion in trade deficits with the world. You almost say, who's making these deals? When you're losing that kind of money, right? We actually have almost $800 billion. Well, I do believe in free trade. I love free trade. But it's got to be smart trade.
Yes.
So I call it fair trade.
Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull maintained from the outset that the US withdrawal did not deliver a mortal wound to the TPP.
President Trump has said America will not proceed with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. You have to recognise that his Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, has been a long-time advocate for it. The Republican Party in the Congress have been strong supporters of the TPP. So it is possible that US policy could change over time on this.
It hasn't so far, but the trade partnership continues under an arrangement involving the other 11 countries in the deal. Meanwhile, the refugee resettlement deal forged between the Obama administration and Australia looked like it was under threat earlier in the year too. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton tried his best to sound positive.
So obviously we entered into an arrangement with the previous administration. We would like for that to continue with the Trump administration, but we're working with the Trump officials at the moment. So that's where we're at.
News soon broke of a terse phone call between Mr. Trump and Mr. Turnbull, where the US president made it clear he was angry about the deal, calling it stupid and rotten. But when the two leaders met in May, they both downplayed media accounts, with President Trump dismissing the story as what he called fake news.
Well, we had a good telephone call.
We had a great call.
You guys exaggerated that call. That was a big exaggeration. I want to tell you, we had a great call. I mean, we're not babies, but we had a great call.
While Mr. Trump reluctantly agreed to honour the deal in the end, New Zealand's new Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, wanted to welcome refugees to her country. Ms. Ardern used several conversations with Mr. Turnbull to urge him to accept New Zealand's offer to take some of the refugees, but he's held off on the offer.
We thank them for the offer. They've kept it outstanding, but our focus is on completing the resettlement arrangements with the United States, which of course covers up to 1,250 refugees. So we'll complete that, and then when that is complete, then we can reconsider the New Zealand proposal.
So Ms. Ardern pledged 2.7 million Australian to help the refugees in the meantime, although they're not detained in Papua New Guinea's Manus Island Detention Centre now.
There is a job to be done to care for those on the islands in the interim. We intend to work with PNG and other agencies like the International Red Cross to financially support them with any additional needs that may be need to be met while those refugees remain on the island.
Elsewhere in the region, China's activities in the South China Sea, placing weapons systems in disputed territories, were putting Australia under pressure. A specialist in Chinese and Asia-Pacific security at the Australian National University, Dr. Amy King, noted it could wedge Australia between its two key international partners.
It creates real uncertainty, I think, about China's intentions for the South China Sea. So the development of these weapon systems, even if they're defensive, suggests that China envisages the possibility of future conflict in this region. And it's, I think, very important for Canberra to remember that the South China Sea dispute goes to the heart of the strategic relationship between the US and China.
Beyond the region, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to Australia in February marked a major milestone in Australian-Israeli relations. In July, annual AUKMIN discussions between the British and the Australian Foreign and Defence Ministers focused on counter-terrorism, trade ties and strategic cooperation. British Defence Secretary Sir Michael Fallon said increased cooperation on security and intelligence would strengthen both countries' defence capabilities.
We believe that Australia, as an enhanced partner in NATO, can play a pivotal part in enhancing NATO's understanding of the challenges that we share in the Indo-Pacific region. And we believe that the five-power defence arrangements have a greater role too to play in building regional security, in increasing maritime security, and helping to fight terrorism.
In September, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop addressed the United Nations General Assembly and targeted North Korea over its nuclear program.
The United Nations Security Council is the custodian of international peace and security. Yet the authority of the Council is being challenged, undermined, even ignored. The most egregious example is North Korea. Its illegal nuclear and missile programs violate multiple United Nations Security Council resolutions. The security of millions of people is at risk as a result of North Korea's refusal to abide by international laws and norms.
In October, North Korea wrote an open letter to Australia's Parliament urging it to distance itself from the Trump administration. Julie Bishop called the letter an unprecedented, desperate act.
I see it as evidence that the collective strategy of imposing maximum diplomatic and economic pressure through sanctions on North Korea is working. And this is a response to the pressure that Australia, the United States, China, Japan, South Korea and others are putting on North Korea so that it will refrain from its current conduct of provocative and threatening behaviour.
As the year drew to an end, Australia's relationship with China was under deepening strain. An Australian Security Intelligence Organisation report listed a number of states allegedly engaging in espionage and foreign interference against Australia. Soon after that came a scandal around Labor Senator Sam Dastyari's relationship with an influential Chinese businessman. And then a foreign policy white paper, the first in more than a decade, highlighted the concerns about China's activities in the South China Sea. Malcolm Turnbull was left to joke that maybe Australia could at least dominate the world at sport, specifically cricket.
We are not entirely without ambitions of global dominance. Good luck, Steve Smith. Go Australia, reclaim the ashes, beat the bombs. Thank you.